wondering if the world will leave us out to dry in the sun, will they dust their hands of us, wipe them clean? My father tells me that irik, the Marshallese word for when the tide is nearest an equilibrium, is the best time for fishing. Maybe that's what I'm doing, fishing for recognition, writing the world, willing the world to find its balance. So that people remember that beyond the discussions, beyond the policy, the statistics, there are faces all the way out here. There is a baby stomping squeaky yellow light-up shoes across the edge of a reef, not yet underwater.
Okay. That was Kathy Jepnil-Kitchener of the Marshall Islands. And that does it for our broadcast. A very special thanks to our local crew here in Marrakesh. Rania Khadr, Danya Nader, Phil Hasty, Mohammed Shama, Sean Russell, Ahmed Galal, Amr Yassin, and Fatima Zahra. Happy birthday, Fatima.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59, and Positively Revolting is up next, right after this.
On November 18th, from 8 p.m. until 10, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary, we will focus on Mr. Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron established the attitude and stylistic vocabulary of socially conscious music in America. His music was powerful, his lyrics relevant, and his voice, beautiful. So join us from the grassroots, November 18th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland.
Listen every fourth Friday on KBOO Portland from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. to Pacific Underground, where Asians and Pacific Islanders take the mic into our own hands.
The other thing, too, is when I go to dim sum, I don't really talk that much.
It's business.
It's business, and it really freaks out some of my friends here in the U.S.
Each month, we cover a new theme that unpacks API identities.
Have you ever been told your English is so good?
Well, for me, yeah, it happens all the time.
That's Pacific Underground, every fourth Friday from 11 a.m. to noon on KBOO Portland.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, and I'm the guest host for you today for Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Ani and Lynn will be back with you, I believe, next week or the week following that. I'm not sure about the day after. Sorry about that buzz. My engineer, Kristen Yount, and I both heard a buzz. I hope it didn't go out to you. It seems like it's gone now. Hopefully, we won't have any problems with our audio today. And so, but our topic today is 10 days into Trump's president-elect and the slide to fascism. Is there a slide to fascism? This is, of course, a call-in show, and I don't have any guests, and I welcome your calling, so I'm going to give you that number right now. It's 503-231-8187. That's right. Call in with your discussion and opinions about this. I have a few clips for you. I'd like to tell you that I wanted to bring you a guest. I wanted to bring you a guest from the Center for Constitutional Rights or a guest from the Southern Poverty Law Center to get us filled in with some of this. Unfortunately, they are so extremely busy because of Trump's being president-elect and the kinds of things his transition transition team is saying, that he's saying, members close to him, Giuliani, that they are completely overwhelmed with response, and they're having to deal with that. And we're very apologetic about not getting to be on our show today. I think that it's very important that we recognize how much is going on out there. One of the things has been a big, big uptick in violent in violence against people, hate crimes. The Center for the Southern Poverty Law Center has had over 430 hateful intimidation and harassment incidents reported to them between November 9th and November 14th. That's right, just in that short period of time. They've done their best to look into each one of these incidents, and they have been reporting them, the types of harassment that have been going on. But obviously, they are overwhelmed and busy with the work they have to do investigating that. And so if you were wondering, being president-elect and his future presidency result in more hate and violence as a result of his kind of language and speaking and what he's encouraged during his candidacy? Yes, indeed, it is happening. It's happening in a really big way, unfortunately, and it's making everybody very uncomfortable. So I want to talk about who his cabinet, who, you know, he's putting forward for his cabinet, his transition team, all of that kind of thing, and I'd like to hear from you about it. It's 503-231-8187. Please get your phone ready. You have information, bring it to us. I'd like to read you a statement from the Center for Constitutional Rights. This is the one that they wrote immediately following the election, and I'm going to just read to you the last statement. First, it says, "We send love and solidarity to all those who are hurting and afraid that Donald Trump's America excludes them. We share the despair of millions who are in a shock that a candidate suggested by the KKK has won the supported by the KKK has won the presidency of the United States. The dangers of a Trump presidency go beyond the attacks on people of color, women, Muslims, immigrants, refugees, LGBTQI people, and people with disabilities. His campaign was marked by the strategies and tactics of authoritarian regimes, endorsing and encouraging violence against political protesters, threatening to jail his opponent, refusing to say he would accept the results of the election if he lost, punishing critical press members. Together with all of those who value freedom, justice, and self-determination, we must resist and prevent at all costs a slide into American fascism." And that's basically their stance. Their headline for this statement was, "Resistance is our civic duty. CCR responds to Trump election." So I think, you know, I started thinking, well, what is fascism? We all use that word. What do we mean? We think of Hitler. And I think one of the most important aspects of fascism is the authoritarian taking of power, and also nationalism, when you're excluding others. And that nationalism goes to meaning excluding all except, you know, a prize white majority that they hope to have. I want to play a clip from Trump. This is his. This was in his. It was one of the debates in September. Let's go to that clip.
"We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, it worked very well in New York, it brought the crime rate way down, but you take the gun away from criminals that shouldn't be having it. We have gangs roaming the street, and in many cases, they're illegally here, illegal immigrants, and they have guns, and they shoot people."
So listen to what he managed to get all in that one statement. He managed to say that he'd like to go back to stop and frisk, something that has been ruled unconstitutional. He managed to get in roaming gangs. This is a phrase that he's used in the past. There was an infamous incident of a woman getting beaten and raped in the Central Park, and he put out the image, and the press and the police put out the image of roaming. Actually, they called them wilding. Gangs of young African-Americans American men who were roaming the streets, wilding, looking to murder and rape and destroy us regular people. It turned out to not be true at all. Five young black men were forced into confessions that later proved to be untrue. He was calling for their execution. Finally, many years later, the actual one individual who participated in the crime and had a criminal history of rape confessed to it, and the DNA matched, and gee whiz, no, we shouldn't have killed those five young men, and now we have to pay millions of dollars, you know, to them and should in restitution for the harm that was done them. So this is, he knowing that this is, you know, this is when he throws out these kinds of phrases, he's being roaming gangs. Once again, I haven't heard about roaming gangs in New York recently, but all of a sudden we're supposed to think that they're there. And this is a part of a nationalist agenda, a right-wing agenda, an extreme right-wing agenda. And it's intended to raise fear and fear of other and create a sense of danger from people that would otherwise just be, you know, our neighbor's son or daughter on the street. So I'd like to hear from you about this issue. It's really critically important. And what are you doing yourselves? I know so many people have been on the streets in Portland night after night, probably the first five nights after the election. People are trying to figure out how they're going to organize themselves in the face of this extreme right wing. Please give us a call. Let us know what you think is important to be talking about right now. It's 503-231-8187. I promise you'll get tired of me talking if you don't get on here soon. So law and order is what one of the things that Trump is really pushing, and I think it's important to go ahead and talk about that. Proposals for his cabinet include Giuliani or Newt Gingrich as attorney general, both with horrible histories. Newt Gingrich was one of the only speakers of the House, I believe, to be formally censored for basically corruption in some involvement in speech giving in a school he had or classes he was running. He is being proposed again, resurrected from, you know, infamy and out of the media notice as much as possible for us. He's being resurrected as a possible attorney general. So let me remind you who the attorney general is. He gets to direct where the offices of the federal government go, the officers, the FBI. He sets the agenda for the FBI. And he also gets to set which cases are taken up and in which way and how much effort the United States puts into that. So if we think of a Giuliani, that's pretty scary. Joy Reid is a commentator and a program host on MSNBC. I wasn't very familiar with her, but I saw her in talking about Trump, and she had Vince Warren, director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, on, and a couple other panelists, one from the NAACP, and I'm not remembering the other, but they were talking about a Trump presidency and Giuliani as an attorney general and what could that mean. And she said openly that she had lived in New York under Giuliani, as had Vince Warren, and they both agreed that it was terrifying for black people being under Giuliani, that he used the police force as a weapon against ordinary people of color, and everyone knew it and everyone felt it. So this is who's being put forward. I also have a clip from Giuliani. I think we'll go ahead and go to that clip in just a minute. I'll let Kristen bring that clip up. But it talks to his attitude about race as well. Let's go ahead and go to that clip.
This is like Andrew Jackson's victory. This is the people beating the establishment. And that's how he posited it right from the beginning. The people are rising up against a government they find to be dysfunctional. And yes, it's a defeat for the Democrats, but this is a defeat for some Republicans too.
Oh, unfortunately, in that clip, we missed the one part I did want to hear from him, which was where he said that this was the best thing that had happened since Andrew Jackson had won the White House. Now, that's not just a dog whistle. That's a dog horn. And so, you know, basically what he's talking about is a president who's famous for the Indian Exclusion Act and for his treatment of his brutal butchery of Native Americans and the Trail of Tears, and he also was a large slave owner. In fact, there is a movement trying to get his face off of the, I think, whatever bill it is, I'm not remembering. And so, you know, this is who Giuliani waves out there for all of his followers to get a sense of the racial character of what his law enforcement would be like. Let's go ahead and hear one of the callers. I believe we have a couple callers on the line. Paul, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say thank you to you, and I think that as far as what we have to do now, I think that it's exactly this. I think that we have to have discussions like this, which don't normalize any of the things that the Trump campaign put forward. And you know, I was listening to NPR yesterday, and I heard a 7-minute interview with a white nationalist, and you know, wow. And to be fair, like you know, they pushed back a little bit on what he was saying, but it's still the end result. You know, I'm driving in the car with my kids, and so I had to turn it off after a couple minutes, and I just think it's the end result is that it's sort of normalizing or bringing into the discussion what is a hateful racist position that, you know, counters all of the values that I want to instill in my children and that we sort of as a society, I thought, held dear. And so anyway, I think that what we do now is we support stations like KBOO that, you know, have discussions like this out in the open over the airwaves that we can share in. And we support the Center for Constitutional Action. Is that what you said? CCA?
Yes. And it's ccrjustice.org. It's the Center for Constitutional Rights. It really is an excellent organization along with, you know, you can say that about the ACLU in general as well. I know for some people, these organizations aren't as radical as they would like them to be, but I also know that the Center for Constitutional Rights goes to the wall for the people that they defend, and that includes all of the people that are disenfranchised.
Right, and the Southern Poverty Law Center
as well,
and, you know, all these places, and support them, and then you know, the people around you who are most in danger, you know, be and yourself, you know, even be aware of that, you know, be aware and
keep talking to each other, protest, resist when we need to, when they try to pass laws, when they try to make things sound normal. I agree with you. Thank you so much for calling in, Paul. I do want to bring up one kind of way that things got normalized, and this is before Trump or just before. Recently, there was a demonstration. There was a protest from Don't Shoot PDX and Black Lives Matter. They went down to City Hall to testify, and the city council pulled an end run around them and left the chambers and left them there to be locked in. One thing very interesting is who was in the stairway. It wasn't just Portland police. It wasn't just Oregon police. No, Homeland Security was brought in to our city council to deal with peaceful protest, to keep them from being able to testify at our city council. Let's think about that. Homeland Security stopping peaceful protesters from being able to testify at our city council. That is not normal. That is not something we've had before. I didn't grow up with a national police force stepping in to our local things. In fact, that was thought of as impossible and unconstitutional. Only foreign autocratic, those bad commies or those bad fascists had state police. But we do have state police, and we need not to. I heard that on the regular news. I didn't hear anyone comment, say, why was Homeland Security there? What the heck are they doing there? What's that got to do with a very peaceful protest at City Hall? So I think we need to pay real attention to how fascism creeps in. And I promise you, state police, by that I mean national police, is a part of a fascist state. Let's go to our next caller. We have another caller on the line. Chris, thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, wow, great conversation. Yeah, another interesting thing to note about Andrew Jackson, going back to the Giuliani comment, is that he was also a land speculator, right? So capitalism was really the impetus for him to push Indians out, is that he pushed them off the land so that then he could parcel it out and make a profit, right? So
stealing Indian land, I think, hasn't Trump been in direct battles over casinos with Native Americans?
Yeah, and you know, he's about to take the helm in the midst of this Dakota Access controversy, right?
So, yes.
Which we've already seen, you know, it's like going back to, you know, the late 19th century with high-tech military equipment. You know, we're seeing this replay of the relations between the indigenous people who were here first and, you know, this superimposed nation state. Play out just like it was, you know, 1871 all over again.
Yes.
But the other thing I wanted to note that I think is interesting, too, that now, to put this in a wider historical context, is that, you know, Bush in many ways laid the groundwork for the conditions that we're experiencing now. And arguably, Obama, I don't think that he's really done anything to really make anything better, but maybe has held the line. And one of those things that happened was after September 11th, we completely pivoted away from domestic terrorism monitoring and the monitoring of these white nationalist groups and pivoted to the focus on our Muslim Americans and also Muslim potential suspected Muslim quote-unquote terrorists abroad. And what that allowed was for the growth of these organizations and essentially the growth of a paramilitary contingent in the United States.
And the wiping away of the word terrorism applied to them, at least with McVeigh, we called him a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, and even the New York Times is now talking about Bannon or Banyan, and they call him a nationalist, not a white nationalist. Right?
Yes.
So the language is very important. But this paramilitary thing, again, it goes back to Jackson. It goes back to those folks who, if you read Indigenous People's History of the United States, that those kinds of individuals who had the mindset that these individuals today and these groups and organizations today have, you know, we're right back there. And what I'm frightened of is that Trump can signal to these groups to begin moving, and that even, you know, the possibility of some, you know, secretive communication between the government, like through the CIA, through the NSA, through Department of Homeland Security, where they could actually coordinate the paramilitary groups and allow them to be kind of the tip of the spear, so to speak.
The trial that was here of the paramilitary group that was in Harney County is a very interesting, I mean, you know, eco, quote, terrorists, really property saboteurs, not terrorists, were given sentences of over 20 years, with the terrorist enhancement being that additional 20 years that could be tacked on. So, yes, very clearly, it's a how you want to apply the word and how you want to call it.
Yeah. And then, and further, you know, those folks who just got cleared of all charges for what they did down in Harney County, What signal did the federal government just send to all of those organizations across the country that think that way?
If I threw a bottle through a window of a federal building, I am quite sure I would be doing time.
Yes. And then the last thing that I wanted to say was regarding these organizations that you talked about at the top of the show, the Center for Constitutional Rights and the Southern Poverty Law Center, and now ProPublica is taking on the role of creating a database of hate crimes, right?
Yes.
That was just announced. I heard about that last night. And here's the thing. These are the kinds of statistics that the federal government is supposed to be collecting and publishing. And we have these nonprofit organizations that are running on shoestring budgets that are having to stand in the gap. And so, again, it's like when we step back and look at this larger kind of government apparatus, it's really kind of crumbling. And we have these civil service organizations or nonprofit organizations that have to step in to fill these holes in information that we should already have.
Yes. Well, thank you, Chris. You know, yeah. I think what you're bringing up is really important, and I think that it's going to be important that we organize ourselves and that we step forward to protect those of us who are being directly attacked or directly targeted
by the system, especially because of what you just said. When we see that we have federal employees that are preventing people from participating in local democracy, we really gotta realize that we're the ones, and that other people aren't necessarily going to do what we need to do to protect ourselves. And it is up to us. We really have to turn in to each other and build really strong networks in the places where we are.
Okay, well, Chris, I'm going to let you go with that. I want to encourage other callers, but I agree with you. That's exactly what we need to be doing. Thank you for calling in. I want to hear from the rest of you out there. You've got many different opinions. There's many different aspects of what's happened since Trump won the election, or, you know, who knows that he won the election, since Trump became president-elect. So please give us a call at 503-231-8187. I very much want to hear from you and what you have to say about it. I want to go on a little bit more about if Giuliani was an attorney general. I want to remind people, many of you probably are not familiar with, that we have a fusion center in the state. Actually, we have two of them. There are over 50 fusion centers around the United States. And what they are is centers where all levels of police from local, regional, state, even Native American police, Park Police, NORTHCOM, the military, as well as, of course, FBI and Homeland Security, have representatives who bring in data and observe and watch. They've been caught coordinating the attempt to put down the Occupy movement. And recently in Oregon history, they were caught investigating the Black Lives Matter issue. So those fusion centers are going to be used as the ears, eyes, and hands of the federal government as it goes forward, playing a stronger role in all of our local jurisdictions. Do we have another caller on the line, Kristen? Kyle, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. What would you like to say about the world since we have Trump as president-elect?
I don't know if I can communicate vomit over the phone, but that's the way I've been feeling for the last, since before he was even elected. And who knows, like you say, if he really was even elected. I haven't even listened to Greg Palast yet, but I'm sure that I will in some future program at KBOO. Thank God for KBOO in this city. And I will probably get even more ticked off because they love it when the vote counts are really close like that, because then they can sway them so easily.
Yes.
And they do, and they probably have, and we've probably been had once again. You know, that's why we needed to beat him decisively, and we did not do that.
No, we definitely didn't.
But anyway, it didn't gel. That's all. That's history. But what I'm saying now is we need to really be aware and to really push our local, and KBOO is already there, but I'm talking about the KON, KGW, KATU, local news stations. We need to start pushing on them. We need to get vocal with them to really start coming up with the truth and not the BS. Stop with the furrowed brows over the protesters and, you know, the attitudes. Get real and tell the truth about what's going on, such as Homeland Security being called in to the city hall.
And I'm assuming our mayor had that pre-planned because he knew they were going to do that end run out of the council. I'm assuming that he was coordinating all of this activity with protests at the city hall with Homeland Security.
I wouldn't doubt it. They do have their own spy network, a spy plane that flies around. This is true. It was actually reported on the regular street news. They have their own regular spy plane that flies constantly around Portland. Radios back to a tower on the West Hills. And from the West Hills, the feed can be picked up by people who are authorized to pick it up.
So let's talk a little bit, Kyle. I want to. Was there another point you wanted to make?
Well, basically, it's the they're living in a bubble, And we have to continually push against and tell the truth. We need to continually get on the news media and the people that we depend upon for our information and say we want good information. We don't want BS anymore. We don't want your car salesman.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to throw it out there. This is not a popular thought. People always like to say, well, the computer doesn't make much difference. But I'm going to say, and also share that good story or that good insight or that good information you get on your social media. If you're going to Facebook and you read a really good article revealing something, share it far and wide. You know, tag your friends who you might think will be interested. I'm not saying harass your friends with multiple, too many Facebook invitations and too much of that, but I'm saying use all the different forms of ways that you have to get your message out.
We got to keep the truth alive because we have now, these people are really looking to promulgate this lie, lie that the country is in dire straits and we're in a mess and we have gangs roving the streets and all this BS that they're, lions and tigers and bears. Oh, no, lions and tigers. come on, people.
Thank you very much for that, Kyle.
They don't want to look at facts and figures of actual crime statistics. They want so that they can build their police force.
Well, and fear has always been a good way to motivate people. And, Hitler knew that as well. And, the Stasi knew that as well. Fear is a really good way to motivate people. It's basic and interior to us. I'm going to let you go, Kyle.
I have one more thing I wanted to say.
All right.
And that is that, along this fear and this loathing that we're looking at here, this happened in 9/11, okay? We need to really keep an eye on things really closely now because we are a heartbeat away from having another 9/11, okay? Now, I'm not going to tell you that's a conspiracy or not. I'm just saying it could happen.
I see what you're saying. Another excuse to be able to tighten up the notches.
One large excuse like that, and we are in the tank. It's the Reichstag fire all over again, and we are now looking at a red-headed Hitler.
That's an interesting way to put him. I think that there are many similarities. Thank you very much for calling in, Kyle. I want to give that number out there again. It's 503-231-8187. I want to talk about the most vulnerable among us, and that is Muslims and other people that are disenfranchised. And I want to bring up that there's actually a Trump advisor talking about a Muslim registry, and his name is Chris Kobach. He's a secretary, Kansas Secretary of State, Chris Kobach, and he's talking about raising up having a register so that all Muslims have to register. Well, I know you remember under Hitler, I believe it was the yellow star that Jewish people had to wear, and there is a petition online, I believe, saying tell Trump that if they start registering Muslims, we'll all register as Muslims so that we all become Muslims so they cannot sort us out. I think they would probably use name recognition to try to sort it out like they do with names elsewhere, but yeah, I love the idea that, yes, we all are. And I think it's going to be critical that we defend our Muslim brothers, sisters. They are our fellow humans, and they're going to be under attack in an even greater way. And I know from one friend who has many friends in the Muslim community that there are actually many people planning on trying to see if they can leave. I mean, images of pogroms come along and certainly, images of being attacked and violence, of having women wearing hijabs being ripped off their heads, etc. He also has, there was a spokesman on the pro-Trump Great American PAC. His name is Carl Higbee, and he's talking about Japanese internment. He threw it out. Now, don't think they accidentally throw these terms out. And in his speech, it was really clear that he said people who don't have, who aren't Americans, who don't have constitutional protections or something like that. I want to let people know Yes, indeed. If you are in America, you have constitutional protections. You have a right to due process, and you don't have to be a citizen. Our Constitution is not using the word citizen in there when it says how we have to behave and treat people with human rights. So I think it's really important that we not let any of this get by. Also, obviously, Native Americans are a big target, and as was pointed out with the Dakota Access Pipeline and the large congregation of Native and Indigenous peoples from around this country and around the world in North Dakota are being put down with not just, local law enforcement, but private, quote, security using dogs. We've all seen, or many of us have seen, the pictures of the bloody mouth of the dog that was used to attack demonstrators praying. So I think that we have to really keep our eyes on protecting those who are the most vulnerable as they are attacked in this society. I want to go to our next caller. I believe we have another caller on the line.
Hello?
James, good morning. Hey, and I'm noticing there's not very many women out there calling, and I feel like Bill, I feel like some of our, Joe on one of our talk shows having to say women call in, but I really do love to hear from all of you women out there as well. So, but welcome.
Well, I am a boy with long hair, so...
Okay, well...
I'm not qualified.
Okay, thanks, James.
I was calling in. I had kind of a situation out at my house with the Multnomah County Sheriff yesterday regarding an eviction, and I had called Cop Watch kind of at the last moment because they were threatening to kick my door in. And I have a situation where my house has gone through foreclosure, but it was an illegal foreclosure through Wells Fargo Mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And they skipped an entire step in the process. Unfortunately, because of my limited financial resources, I'm not in a position where I can hire an attorney to help me out. I even offered at the end to pay half of my back mortgage, and which is delinquent by a year, and they refused that, which put me in the situation where I got to witness my home being auctioned off on the courthouse steps a little over a month ago.
Wow.
And it culminated in yesterday. I was surprised the sheriff's office or department basically came out. There's probably easily two dozen of them, some of them dressed, fully dressed in what I could only consider riot gear, and out in front of my house for a good 2 to 3 hours, essentially trying to negotiate with me to come out and turn over my home. And I was continually explaining to them that the research that I had done independently requires them to merely serve me with a notice, and then approximately 7 days from that notice, I would get a court date where I could go before a judge and explain my situation. And it seems as if they've, much like Wells Fargo, kind of circumnavigated the process and skipped a step.
So, James, how are you seeing this related to Trump? I think it is. I just want to hear you say about it.
Well, I could imagine that the law enforcement in general is probably emboldened by him being elected.
I also think that this housing crisis, I don't think that Trump caused it. Please don't think I'm saying that. But he is in real estate, and he's certainly one of those who will continue to engineer huge profits being made off of real estate. And that leaves people like you in the position you're in. It was another member of the oligarchy. It was different president. But I only can believe that it will get worse rather than better.
Yeah. I mean, this, you're making that point about him being in real estate, and you know that's kind of the situation that I'm dealing with. Is that there are basically people on paper right now who, in the eyes of the courts, own my home that I've lived in for 17 years. It's a home that I built with my own two hands, and I'm very, very, not only financially invested in it. I probably have $100,000 or $200,000 in equity, but I'm also very emotionally invested in it.
And it's at a stage now when you couldn't sell it, even though you did have equity in it.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
It's at a stage now where you can't sell it, even though you do have equity in it.
Correct. Yeah, they're like I said before, you know, I don't have the financial means to spend all my money to hire a lawyer to perhaps win. I was involved in a court case where I had to sue someone back in 1991 for $5,000 as a contractor. And it cost me $5,000 in attorney fees.
So no fun at all. Well, I think, you know, James, one, I just want to say my heart really goes out to you. I had to sell at a downtime in the market, but that's not even important. I had to leave a home of 25 years, and I know what it means to have an attachment to that. And so it really does. It breaks my heart to hear what you're going through, and I know that there are many more people in Portland going through it, but also around the world. Last week, I had Andy Worthington, a historian and journalist from London, on, and it's the same thing happening in London and many other cities throughout the world. And it is part of the international real estate biz right now, is doing this kind of thing. Was there anything else you wanted to let us know, James?
No, other than that, you know, I want to encourage people to basically stand their ground when they feel they're right.
Well, I hope you're reaching out to tenants' rights organizations and things like that, that we're hoping to help people who are going through foreclosure. I don't have the name of the organization or anything like that right with me. Yes. Portland Tenants United is one.
Alliance of Tenants.
Yeah.
For anyone out there who might be dealing with something similar, whether they're, you know, I realize my case is somewhat odd because I'm a homeowner, whereas most people.
But many people would have wanted to be a homeowner and have now that chance is far, far gone. It's not going to happen.
Yes.
And, you know, that was also one of the things put forward as American Dream. Even at the same time as that, American Dream was built on stealing the land from Native Americans, and we know that. So we've got a lot of work to do in this country to make it work for the people. Well, thank you for calling, James. I'm going to see if we've got anybody else on the line. And, you know, please reach out to the organizations that may be able to help you if there's any help left. You know, I'd like to be able to tell people there's always some way we can help you, but I see the streets of Portland and I see how many tents and how many people are sleeping on them, and I know that's not true. There's not always a helping hand here in America. Okay, we now have David on the line. David, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I live out in the Gorge. I am a liberal. I'm also a person of color. And I think there's a little bit of two-faced hypocrisy with the liberals about Trump. He gets in people's face because he's rude and he talks about his policies, but he actually hasn't really done anything yet. And the liberals seem to gloss over that with, like, Hillary Clinton and Obama. I mean, where was the outrage with the crimes against humanity and the immoral humanity they've displayed? Like, what do you think the women and children of Libya would think of Hillary Clinton versus Trump?
Hey, I'm with you on this.
Hillary Clinton just totally destroyed that country. And how can she be a person for women's rights?
Well,
and same with Obama. He started extrajudicial assassinations by drone. I mean, that's the worst terrorist weapon we've ever come across, to have a drone hovering over cities. And where's the outrage with that? Trump hasn't done anything yet, but he gets in everyone's face, and then all of a sudden everyone's outraged. But as a person of color out in the Gorge, this discrimination started way back before all of a sudden last week. I mean, the Native Americans are still in reservations. The Native Americans still are discriminated against in the Gorge. And just in Lyle, there's white signs that say white people only in Lyle, Washington. Again, I'm a person of color. I'm not Native American, but that's been scaring me. I've been called out as a terrorist at the Forest Service station in Parkdale because I was a person of color. They saw me walking in the parking lot. So where's the...
I know that what you're talking about is true. I grew up in Eastern Oregon, and I remember when I first moved to... which town was that? maybe it was Pendleton, near the Umatilla Reservation, is that I immediately had people making watch out for drunk Indian jokes. And I remember talking to my mother about that. So, yes, I think you're completely right about that. And I do think, I think that a lot of Hillary followers and a lot of Obama followers wanted to overlook the very real problems with their presidencies their potential presidencies that you've mentioned, that they have not been in reality a friend. Like you said, you know, women in Libya, Afghanistan, Pakistan, how are they being helped by having a Hillary Clinton? They wouldn't have been.
Well, she's a war criminal, but people gloss over it because she speaks nice and Obama speaks also so philosophically, but they don't pay attention and look underneath the covers what's really going on.
But let me do this.
That's the problem with when you have people like that. The liberals just have this mantra, just pretend everything is okay.
Yeah.
And now when Trump's in their face, they all of a sudden nothing's okay. But and we've got to vote for the, you know, the pretty faces Obama and Clinton, when they're the worst war criminals. They have more blood dripping off their hands than Trump has yet.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you bringing this point up and saying this. I want to bring a slightly contrary view, which is I do believe that Trump is one step further towards fascism. I believe that the ground has been well laid for him by the presidencies leading up to here. So I don't believe, but I do. So I'm with you on what the history of the United States has been and the government has been. But I do think that we are in even greater danger. And I do think that Trump has done one thing. This surge in violence is happening as a result of his presidency and of those. He's just saying things, but when he says things, other people take action that demonstrate it. And he's been a big bully on his candidacy, you know, saying beat that guy up, throw that person out, I would just arrest that person, I would put him in jail. And people have been responding violently both at his campaign sites and around the world. In many of these incidents that happened and that have been recorded by the Southern Poverty Law Center, Trump was specifically mentioned. So I do want to put in there that, yes, what you're saying about the before is true, and no one wants to look at the smugness of liberals thinking they're so much better. I agree with you about that, but I think there is something new that's going to be happening with Trump, and it's going to be worse for all of us, including all people of color.
You know, I don't, for people of color, this has already been happening.
Yes, but I think it can, it's not that it can't get worse, internment camps.
My mother couldn't teach in Oregon because she's Asian, even though she got a teaching degree from Oregon State.
Yeah, I believe
you. Okay, so this is what I live with. My sister-in-law's parents were interned in Japan.
Yep.
So this is not new to us, but for some reason the masses, I guess it's the white European masses, are really taking, you know, his rudeness is now, it's a wake-up call, and I think that's a good thing, because Obama and Clinton, they it's just pretend everything's okay.
And Obama got a pass. Obama got a pass.
For people to stand up and see what's really going on, which you wouldn't with Hillary or Obama. And I would say, as a world citizen, how many people would consider Obama and Clinton and Bush fascists for what they've done in the world?
Well, I would consider them war criminals at the very least for what they've done in the world.
So this word fascism being thrown around, well, you know, pretty much all our world leaders are fascists. It's just the press and the window dressing keep it under wraps in this country. So the one thing that's good about Trump, he doesn't care about who he offends. So now people might take action. But the fact that people make choices between voting for Trump versus a war criminal Clinton, and they think that Clinton is this messiah, it's just, where's the outrage? No one's looking deep enough. All our leaders are immoral. Trump is just a last in a long line. And
well, I really thank you for bringing this point to us today.
It was the greatest vote for me. I voted for the greatest woman for president, which was Jill Stein. You know, I had an opportunity to vote my conscience, not my fear. And I think if all the Clinton sycophants were voting their conscience, we would have Jill Stein.
Yes, but now we're going to have to join with all of us that are not the Trumps and see if we can't protect ourselves in the coming period.
While Obama refuses to wrap up his drone program with his talk with Trump, where's the outrage on
that? Or to take more decisive action regarding North Dakota.
He, he was, and that too is like the Dakota thing is that didn't happen with Trump. They were sicking the dogs on them before Trump was elected.
Absolutely.
No one seems to, there's no outrage there.
Oh, I think there is outrage there. There's been outrage about that rising, but I get your point, and I'm going to let you go. I think you did a good job of making your point today, and I do appreciate it. So thank you for calling.
Thank you for the show.
You're welcome. Let's see if we've got anybody else on the line. Harvey? Thanks for calling, Harvey.
Hello, Linda. Well, I wrote a two-minute statement about the Trump presidency, and I'd like to read it to you and your vast KBOO audience.
Okay, do your very best reading job.
Okay. We know that the fossil fuel industry owns Trump and his administration. President Trump has said that he will eradicate all environmental restrictions against nuclear, coal, oil, and natural gas, which will accelerate climate destabilization and overheat our small home planet, our Mother Earth. In the last 5 years, the hottest years in recorded history, causing long droughts, out-of-control forest fires, terrible flooding, as well as larger and more frequent storms, hurricanes, and tornadoes across America and the world. We have lost our national election to the fossil fuel industries, but we still can take a personal responsibility by voting with our dollars. It's time to divest from nuclear, coal, oil, and natural gas and reinvest our money in renewable energy resources like solar, wind, wave, and geothermal generated electricity, as well as rechargeable energy storage systems and new electric vehicles to protect our precious environment so that we can move towards a sustainable energy future for us, our kids, and future generations.
Well, thank you. That was really well read and really well said. And thank you, Harvey. I agree with you about that.
Thank you, Linda.
All right. Now, do we have any other callers on the line? We have Sunny on the line. Sunny, I'd like to invite you to talk. I also want to get to naming some of the other possible cabinet members that have been proposed so we can see a little bit more of what Trump has to offer. I'll do that after speaking with you, Sunny, though.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yes, well, thank you for the show, and this is all so important. I would like to quickly, succinctly, lay out some stuff that might seem kind of inflammatory, but I do not mean it to be inflammatory.
Well, you know, you can't control that you actually have something different to say than most people want to hear, so go for it.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to say my descent, my racial descent, is very mixed. I've got everything in me, of which I'm proud of all of it, white, black, red, Jewish, Armenian, you name it, okay? Additionally, my Indian descent is connected to history clans, so we paid real close attention to our track and, you know, along the course of history. And I welcome other people to do so, and I recognize absolutely that everyone has a special ancestry that is valuable to working out solutions for everyone in the planet. I don't think that mine is any more special than anybody else. I'm happy to speak about my history, my ancestry, and I also like to hear about the history and ancestry of other people. And I'm lower working class origins, so I think I have a little bit of insight about some of the intensity class-wise that's felt by poor white struggling Americans. And I do not mean this as pro or negative either way. My absolute position is neutral at this time, to stay in the middle, to try to mend all sides together into a nice blanket of unity. But I have to say, being lower working class, perceived mostly as white most of my life, that when work stations were set up to help people who have come here illegally to get day labor, there really has always been a sector of the American economy, whatever color, of citizens who are struggling, just barely making it.
Yes.
Who do need those day jobs. And so it was perceived by the lower working class and upper levels of the working class that middle-class whites to assuage their guilt over racism and also to get cheap work in their yards and in their kitchens and in their daycare centers and et cetera, looked forward to these workstations for illegal entry people. And meanwhile, other people that were just hanging on by their bare fingernails were falling down. And also, we knew that because of this.
I'm not sure what you're saying, Sonny. I'm not quite getting. Are you saying that?
What I'm saying is that there's always been a sector of the lower working class, whatever color, in this country that has barely hung on by its fingernails because maybe some kind of mishap has come along to their family, or maybe there's been prolonged family difficulty, but those people that work as roofers, those people that work...
Oh, I completely agree with you. I think the system of capitalism always relies on having a pool of people ready to take jobs at the lowest possible wage.
Yes, I agree with that. But see, so how it's been felt along the lower working class and working class lines is, well, it's easy for some people to say, let's make it easier for you folks to stay and to find work, and whatever happens to those other folks over there on the
other
side.
So you're saying that's
a
source of the anti-immigrant sentiment.
Absolutely, absolutely, because there are still lots of people even on the street right now that are like, I've got to get something to keep me going and to keep some food in my stomach, but I also have to compete now with great numbers coming from all around the world. But I'm just saying there's a perception there. Now, the other thing, too, this is the other thing. Now, you take Eminem, you know, that white rapper guy who's still kind of current, right? And he's ranted and raved against women and horrible fantasies of domestic abuse against his wife, killing her, putting her body in the trunk. Lots of misogyny there. Ugly, ugly hatred.
Right.
Now, let's take Kanye West, who's married to Kim Kardashian, and she and he were just burglarized recently, and she looks pretty shook up from it. Now, he's a black rapper, and he rants and raves against women, too, terribly, horribly, and he's got one song called Monster, which is all about a fellow standing outside a woman's house and how he's going to break into that house and the horrible things he's going to do.
So what are you wanting?
I'm getting to the point.
Okay.
The point is Kanye West's video, which is called Monster, that accompanies the song, has, for some reason, for the decorative effect of it, has got the bodies of young white women hanging from nooses all around his chair.
My God.
As he's singing this song, and other parts of the song show him lying
okay,
in bed.
Okay, so now wait, I've got wait, other people on the line. Wait. I need you to know. I need you to quickly make your
what
point,
I'm
Sonny.
What I'm winding down to is that a lot of the white populace is aware of this imagery, and it is full of hate towards women, and it's full of hate towards white people, and it is inflammatory, and it's gimmickry, and it's cruddy, and it's low, and we've got to stand against psychological thuggery, physical thuggery, bullyism.
Okay, well, I'm gonna let you go, Sonny. Thank you for calling.
Sure.
And who do we have on the line now? We really only have a few minutes, so I'm going to make this really quick. We didn't get to get through who the other cabinet choices are, but they're generally pretty bad, like putting people oil over the interior, putting people from Wall Street over the Treasury Department, et cetera, and possibly putting his own children violating nepotism laws. So let's go on. Oh, I lost him. He must have wanted to hang up on me. Hi, who do we have on the line?
Hi, this is Gretchen.
Gretchen, thank you for calling. You've got just a few minutes. Go ahead, Gretchen.
Hi there. But I'm not on the line because I've got you on simultaneously.
You should turn off your radio.
Oh.
It makes it very hard for it feedbacks.
It'll feedback, yeah. I've done radio work. Thank you.
Okay, Gretchen, are you there?
I am.
Okay, go ahead. What did you want to say?
Well, I first want to shout out to James, who called about his house being lost via Wells Fargo, and I would be happy to leave a personal contact with the station, not over the air, for James to contact me back, because I, too, was a crime survivor of Wells Fargo.
Okay, so we will. I will have you have our engineer, Kristen, get your number after you're done.
Terrific. And now, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, hi. I'm in shock. We all knew that this was coming. I want to thank all of the people before that made their statements. I think that they were all valid and just a part of the patchwork we're living through. I would challenge KABU to set up some sort of citizen network. There are those of us who have witnessed and been whistleblowers, and we don't do social media. It's dangerous. And I think that we have I think we have a really fine person in Russia who has reported that for us. And I think we're in deep trouble. And that's what I have to say.
All right.
I cannot do that. So I encourage you, and I ask for us all to connect with each other, because we are in fascism. It is here, and that is what we are experiencing.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Gretchen. Nice. We're now all the way out of time. I want to thank all of you for calling. This is Linda Olson Osterlund for Positively Revolting. We should have Ani or Lynn back with the next show. Thank you all for calling in and becoming part of the conversation.
When every second, every day, when every action.